There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. 108 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Hour number two on this Monday. Love to hear from you at 343-0106, 343-0106. We'll get more into the Avenatti charges in just a second. I do want to point out this story, Dennis Pillion's story over at AL.com. I'm sure we'll hear more about this in the next couple of days. But we'll bring it up right now because this is, you know, I had this discussion with somebody yesterday. This kind of world I live in, the island I often talk about being on, which hopefully is not full of toxic waste. Because I am, people say, well, if I tell somebody I'm an environmentalist, they get a preconceived set of notions about me. They said, you believe in man-made global warming. Wait. Did I say that? No. But I'm an environmentalist, and I believe in clean water, clean air, and working to achieve that. I think if 10% of the energy is spent in the rhetoric about anthropogenic global warming was moved into discussing keeping our water clean and our air as clean as possible, not anti-industry, but doing everything we can to limit what pollutants we put in the water that we all share, the air that we all share, I think it's a better place. I believe in protecting areas, wetlands that clean those things up. I believe in taking the extra step to make sure we're not taking the lazy way out and the polluted way out. So yeah, in that I am an environmentalist. And so I see this story and it's not that it's news to me, but it makes me shake my head. Alabama Industrial Facilities, this is Dennis Pillion from AL.com. Alabama Industrial Facilities released more than 82 million pounds of toxic material into the air, land, and water in 2017, according to analysis released this month from the EPA. Alabama had the fifth highest volume of toxic releases into waterways in 2017 with 11.2 million pounds and the fifth most toxic substances released into air with 27.1 million pounds. Overall, the Alabama's 82,110,182 pounds of total releases ranked 11th of the 56 in total release of the 56. What do we put in all territories as well? Is it not just the states? I guess it must be if it's out of 56. Okay, yeah, U.S. states and territory. Thanks, Dennis. So out of all 56 U.S. states and territories, Alabama, 11th from being the worst here on combined water and air. Analysis was published this month in EPA's Toxic Release Inventory, massive collection of legal pollution reports filed with the agency for more than 21,000 industrial facilities across the country. Reports lay out how much of certain chemicals are emitted into the air, land, and water from manufacturing operations, electric utilities, as well as facilities like hazardous material landfills that accept certain toxic substances. Alabama ranked 10th in total releases per square mile and 10th in releases per capita. In 2016, Alabama ranked 10th in the country, so we stayed at 10. Alaska is the far and away the top state in terms of total releases of these pollutants because of large quantity of mining waste. Nevada is second in state rankings with just under 398 million pounds in total releases. I bet you Nevada's high because of all the toxic waste that's buried out there. I bet that comes in the fact, or comes into the equation here. Figures reported show that all the weight of the substances released, not the potential impact on human health and the environment. For this reason, heavier waste like mining refuse to often dominate the total release rankings. However, taking away land releases, which include heavy mining waste, Alabama, and other southeastern states began to climb in the charts. Alabama's ranked fifth in the country for both total air emissions and total water releases. Alabama's 27.1 million pounds of air emissions are driven by the paper industry, with the top eight facilities in terms of air releases all belonging to the paper sector. Other manufacturing facilities, electric utilities also contribute to the state's ranking. I'll put the whole story up on my Twitter feed. You can check it out there, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Boss, programming note here for Friday. Auburn, 6 o'clock with the pregame and the tip. I'd say 6:30, but don't you see that? They put 6:29. I think they're just doing that to drive me crazy because arbitrary times. Like they'll have like a football kickoff be 6:03 or something p.m. I'm like, spent too many decades in the broadcast business. I was like, it cannot be 6:03. It has to be 6 or 6:15 or 6:30, 6:45, 7 o'clock. You can't. And then they go do this. So, yeah, Auburn tip at 6:29 on Friday. So coverage will start at 6 right here at FM Talk 106.5. How about that? Sweet 16. Way to go, Auburn Tigers. Good stuff. All right, read through a couple of texts here and also get back into the Zampinati arrest. And coming up in the second half of the hour, we're going to replay an interview that Dalton and I did this morning with Dr. Alex Beebe, assistant professor of geology at the University of South Alabama, about the what do you call them, the clustering? No, the swarming effect of earthquakes lately in our area. If you didn't catch it this morning, it's going to come up here in just about 12 minutes. All right, from the text line here, Benjamin, good. Benjamin says, I guess we're island neighbors. As a conservative, I find it difficult at times to convey the need for environmental conservation without folks jumping off the conclusions cliff. Well said. Welcome to the... I'm glad we're on the same island, Benjamin. That's cool. And hopefully we keep our island pretty clean. It's just, with that story from Dennis Pillion, it's... Now, it's not anti-industrial. It's not anti the jobs that come with that. It's just, we need to do everything we can within reason to make sure we're not polluting our water and airway. I mean, if anyone should be, and when I say environmentalism, the problem is, like Benjamin referenced there, it gets tied up with some, you know, big world cabal of anthropogenic global warming. I'm talking about things right here in your backyard. Clean water. I mean, you've heard me rant for a decade, which, by the way, May 1st, that's 10 years for the station. Our 10th birthday will be this many, 10, starting on May 1st with the radio station. But I've been for a decade ranting about the sewer overflow issues. Every time there's any rain, it seems like there's a sewer overflow issue. It's not okay. I can't just say it's okay and sit and say it's fine. It's just, it's not okay. Same time when industries, if there's another way for them to do what they're doing and not put as much pollution in the waterway, if anyone should be so engaged in it, we should be. Why do we live here? If you don't care, if you're one of those people, I don't care about all that stuff you talk about. I don't ever go to the beach, and I don't go to the water, and I don't like to look at the pretty delta, and I don't like to look at the trees. Then move to New York, man. I'll flip it around on you. Then move to New York. Go live in Manhattan. Go live in... Get away from... Well, you got Central Park there. There's trees. Go somewhere where there's no nature to look at. But it's one of the things that makes it so great about where we live. So, yes, I am protective of that. Yes, Cryptomarine. Cryptomarine says, well, at least we're not at the bottom of the list for once. Thanks, man. Thank you. That full story up on the... linked it up on my Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5, where you can see some of the fossils I found this weekend, which was cool. I was up in Dallas County and took a second. You know, some people say stop and smell the roses or the flowers. I stopped and dug the fossils, and it was cool. All right, we'll get into a couple of texts here about the Zampinati thing, too. We'll get to in just a second. Want to kind of run through the rest of this story here, though. So here's this brand new. This is just breaking here over the last hour. Went through that Michael Avenatti, celebrity lawyer, they're calling him. That's celebrity lawyer Michael Avenatti. Is he a celebrity, or is it the fact that he represents celebrity? Which one? Both? Okay. Celebrity lawyer Michael Avenatti was arrested Monday on charges he tried to extort up to $25 million from Nike by threatening to hurt that athletic apparel giant financially with negative publicity. Avenatti's also charged in a separate federal case out of Los Angeles, where he's accused of embezzling a client's money in order to pay his own expenses and debts and defrauding a bank in Mississippi. Avenatti, 48, was busted in Midtown Manhattan, 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time by FBI agents about 15 minutes after he tweeted he'd be disclosing a big high school and college basketball scandal perpetrated by Nike that he supposedly had uncovered. I wonder if when the FBI decided they're going to make the raid, if somebody just said, just do it. Everybody said, just do it. Avenatti, who, of course, you know his name because he represented porn star Stormy Daniels in her lawsuit against President Trump, and his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, related to a non-disclosure agreement. But okay, bye-bye. Press conference scheduled, I think it's happening this hour in L.A. to talk about more of these charges against Avenatti. The complaint says last Wednesday, Avenatti and a cooperating witness spoke by phone with lawyers for Nike, during which Avenatti stated, with respect to his demands for payment of millions of dollars, that if those demands were not met, I'll go take $10 billion off your client's market cap, and I'm not blanking around. Nike had no immediate comment. In the L.A. case, Avenatti's accused of negotiating a $1.6 million settlement for a client in a civil case, but then giving the client, quote, a bogus settlement agreement with false payment date of March 10, 2018, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office in L.A. That office said Avenatti misappropriated his client's settlement money and used it to pay expenses for his coffee business, Global Baristas USA, LLC, which operated Tully's coffee stores in California and Washington State as well for his own expenses. Yeah, that'll get him disbarred. I don't know that after this he maybe comes out of all this innocent until proven guilty. It said, when a fake March 2018 deadline passed and the client asked where the money was, Avenatti continued to conceal the payment had already been received, according to court documents. They go on to say here, L.A. Attorney's Office said, Avenatti also allegedly defrauded a bank in Mississippi by submitting to the lender false tax returns in order to obtain loans totaling $4.1 million for his law firm and coffee business in 2014. According to the affidavit, Avenatti obtained loans by submitting fabricated individual income tax returns, so 1040s, for 2011, 2012, and 2013, reporting substantial income even though he had never filed any such returns with the IRS. According to the prosecutor's office, they said the phony returns stated that they're saying he doctored up 1040s to give to this bank in Mississippi. Okay, the phony returns, this is what they say from the prosecutor's office. Phony returns stated that he had earned over $4.5 million-plus in adjusted gross income in 2011, $5.4 million-plus in 2012, and $4.08 in 2013, according to the affidavit. Avenatti allegedly also claimed he paid $1.6 million in estimated tax payments to the IRS in 2012 and paid $1.25 million in 2013. They go on to say here from the U.S. Attorney's Office, in reality, Avenatti never filed personal income tax returns for 2011, 2012, and 2013 and did not make any estimated tax payments in 2012 and 2013. What's the technical term? Yikes. Instead of millions of dollars he claimed to have paid in taxes, Avenatti still owed the IRS $850,438 in unpaid personal income tax, plus interest and penalties for tax years 09 and 10. Avenatti also submitted a fictitious partnership tax return for his law firm. Wow. So, there's the Nike thing. This is, of course, the interesting thing, because that's the big tennis shoe company everybody knows about, but tell you this, he keeps the money. He does not do what is in his client's best interest. He's disbarred. He doesn't file tax returns for 1, 2, 3 years and then takes to a bank, made up 1040s to get a loan. If these things are true, I think the technical term, once again, is yikes. All right, grab a couple calls and text on this. And David in Mobile's first up. Hey, David.
Hey, Sean, before we talk Avenatti, are you going to have a big party for the station turning 10?
Yes, I want to, but this is one of these things I'm not, like, there's things that I absolutely fail at, and planning things that don't come through the speakers for this radio station, like, I focus on what comes out of the speakers, but all the other stuff, I'm not very good at it. So I'm begging for help. Where and what should we do for the big 10th birthday party?
What we could do is get the Waffle House food truck out in the parking lot and have a big party at the station. How about that?
I like that. Writing it down right now. I like that.
Okay. First of all, I want to know what bank in Mississippi is involved in all of this. I'm wondering if it's Trustmark out of Jackson or Hancock Whitney out of Gulfport. But that's just a side thing. But, I had a friend text me about this earlier, and he's like, yeah, he'll probably end up going to Club Fed. I was like, yeah, you think Trump's going to send this guy to Club Fed when all is said and done? Trump's probably going to send him to Leavenworth, or better yet, with all of the mob connections the Democrats allege that Trump has, he probably will send him to the West Virginia prison that Whitey Bulger ended up dying at.
What about sleeping with the fishes? You don't think he's going to get the cement boots or something? What do you think?
It's certainly possible.
I mean, listen, once again, I'm one of those throwbacks that still believes you are innocent until proven guilty. I know there's about seven of us left in the United States, but these three, these are hefty. I know that the Nike allegation is going to catch most of the headlines, but when you defraud your client and you're an attorney, and then you don't file tax returns, and then make up some tax returns, if this is true, and take them to a bank to use them as leverage to be able to be given the loan, yeah, I don't think you come out of this one with a plea. I don't think you come out of this, going our way, slap on the wrist.
Oh no, they're going to throw the book at him, especially since this is both in Manhattan and in Los Angeles, and it's going to be interesting to see. And of course, if for some reason he doesn't end up going to prison, he can always end up being a television judge, Judge Avenatti.
I hope you're not right, because I know you're not right, but I mean, not correct on that. 343-0106, 343-0106. All right. You were talking about on the Joshua, I got your text. Yeah, I think that's, maybe it was east of the Mississippi. What Joshua said in a text to me, early 90s, HS rumor. So is that high school rumor, or is that HS standing for what? Joshua, let me know. HS rumor was that the largest toxic waste dump in the United States of America is in Emile, Alabama. I know there's a big toxic waste dump up there in Emile, but is it bigger than what they've got? And we'll have to hit up the Google here at the news break. I thought there was one, and Nevada is way high on that list of polluted states. I think there's a bigger one in Nevada, but I'm not sure. I have to look at that. But I know Emile was a big deal. I don't know if they are. Is Emile still active? I know that in the 80s we talked about it, 90s we talked about it. I haven't heard much. Emile's in high school. Okay, Emile's in is it Choctaw County or Sumter County? Isn't it Choctaw or Sumter? I know it's over there towards the border, north of Washington County. I mean, I occasionally get up into Choctaw County, but usually I don't go much north of the Washington Choctaw County line. But I think Emile's up. Maybe it's Green. Is it Green? Oh, okay, we'll figure it out. Okay, I got one of my buddies who's in this business here. He's going to let me know. I just see a text coming in on my personal phone. This is how casual we are here on a Monday on the show, because I know he'll answer this. A hazardous waste landfill is not a toxic waste dump. Okay? And so I'm just reading the language of the text here. So hazardous waste landfill is not a toxic waste dump. So, okay. Where is it? Help me out, man. Tell me what county is it in? But this is, I mean, the interesting thing, if you go through Dennis Pillion's story, it takes out some of the storage, right? The storage facilities, and then goes to just what's polluted into air and water. And then Alabama goes from 11th to 5th there. So, it's got to be Sumter County. It's got to be Sumter, because I see in that story, Sumter County had the second highest total in Alabama with 12.7 million pounds. It is Sumter. All right, very good. There we go, Sumter County. All right. And my buddy says it's a fantastic facility. I hope it is. If they're storing the bad stuff up there, I hope it is. All right. The story's over on the Twitter feed. Y'all check it out, and we can discuss here in just a little bit. When we come back, interview I did this morning with Dr. Alex Beebe, Assistant Professor of Geology at the University of South Alabama. It's shaking, man. Shaking, right? A swarming of relatively small, but earthquakes nonetheless in our area. Bruton, Century, Florida. That area. What's it all about? We'll get to that interview when we return right after the news break here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135, FM Talk 106.5, and this Avenatti stuff. You tell me, the guy's a sideshow as it is before there were... If there was an arrest on this, this is going to be... Can't wait to hear him defend himself. I mean, you've heard how he... The stories that he lays out to defend clients. I wonder how he'll do when he is an advocate for himself, or will he not say anything and have his attorney speak for him? Probably the smarter move. Probably smarter move. All right, let's do this. Run to an interview that Dalton and I did this morning. Dr. Alex Beebe, Assistant Professor of Geology at the University of South Alabama. Once again, another quake. This has been, what, 5 in 3 weeks or something like that? This one, same kind of area. It's Century, Florida, up to Brewton, Alabama, right in there, where they're saying the epicenter is. This one, 2.5. Nothing you probably really notice. But it is of interest that this is not a common occurrence around here, except lately in a very small span, it has been. And we talked about that this morning. Speaking of the phone line, though, I want y'all to say hello to Dr. Alex Beebe, Assistant Professor of Geology at the University of South Alabama, joining us to talk about earthquakes. Hey, Doc.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. And if people have not heard, Alex has been on with us on the Midday Show quite a few times talking about earthquakes, but I wanted to get him on this morning because yesterday, is this part of the clustering, another earthquake in our area?
Yeah, this makes it number 5, so definitely an earthquake swarm.
And that's it. That was a term, swarm. Wait, so what? Yeah, how many do you have to hit before you have a swarm?
I'd say it depends on the area, but if it's a quiet area and you get a series of them, if you get, you know, 2, 3, 4, and now we're up to 5, then I would classify this as a swarm in my book for sure.
2.5 magnitude, that's one of the smaller of the ones we've had lately.
Yeah, the highest that we've seen, if I'm not mistaken, was 3.1, which is, again, that's a very low magnitude earthquake. So this one, even weaker, and... again, probably not something that's going to cause much damage and maybe hard to even notice, even if you're in the area.
At what magnitude does this start to become a serious earthquake? What are they used to seeing out in the Californias?
You know, if you get up to around a 6 or so, that's when you're going to start to cause a lot of damage, even a potential loss of life. So magnitude 6 is where most geologists, most geophysicists will kind of raise their eyebrows and say, well, that was a big one. You know, that one... has the potential to do some harm.
Now, when you talk about this swarming here in our area, is there like a... Because we'll hear when people talk about earthquakes elsewhere, like in the Pacific Rim or something like that, that there's pre-quakes, the big quake, and then aftershocks. Are these like that, or are they classified differently?
They are a little bit different in the sense that here there doesn't seem to have been a main event. They've kind of all been around the same magnitude, all like 2 to 3 or so. So within a tight magnitude range. So I guess the difference between a swarm here would be just a series of earthquakes where there's no main shake that's followed then by aftershocks and things are kind of settling back down. So here it just seems to be just the constant magnitude earthquakes that are coming out.
It's raising some eyebrows, though, as people are interested, because this is, you know, something we don't talk about all the time here along the Gulf Coast, and that is tremors. Describe to folks what is causing these earthquakes, because it's a little different than we picture somewhere else, right? And what makes the earth shake around here?
Well, yeah, you're right. It's a lot different here than what we tend to get in places like California and around the Pacific Ocean, the Ring of Fire. You know, you think about big earthquakes over there kind of being a regular event. Here we have faults in the subsurface, faults in the crust, but for the most part we say that they're dormant. They're not involved in actual plates sliding past one another. So at one time they were, though. So we say that these faults are mostly dormant, but occasionally they get reactivated. Typically is kind of the load, the crust is readjusting itself or sagging or settling into place. I kind of think about it like an old house that creaks every now and then. You kind of get these jolting events as things just kind of settle into place.
Okay, so what pressure, if it's not plates colliding or rubbing again, what pressure is causing it?
Well, the best explanation for these particular faults is that we just have a tremendous amount of weight that's being placed in our area, in our region of the Gulf Coast. This is what we call a sedimentary basin. It's basically like a big bowl shape, you know, the Gulf of Mexico. And we have a number of streams and rivers, you know, everything from the Mississippi to what flows into Mobile Bay, that are carrying with them large amounts of sediments. And they have been for hundreds of thousands, millions of years. And that sediment gets dumped in our area, and as a result, we build up weight, we build up pressure, and that causes things to kind of sag and recompensate that load, you know, that we're collecting here.
So the particulates of the sediment that are in the water falling out, those little tiny grains, mm-hmm. enough of them have fallen to create enough weight to push down on the crust.
It's a little bit over a long period of time. But, yeah, you're right. We get, you know, Mobile Bay is not known for having crystal clear water at right. all times. It gets kind of muddy, especially this time of year. And there's a lot of sediment there, you know, a lot of water coming through our system. And that sediment's been piling up, you know, year after year after year. And you start to extrapolate that for tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, you know, millions of years. That's a tremendous amount of weight that we've picked up. And we're sagging as a result here.
So when that sag happens and it gives, that's what causes these tremors?
That's the best explanation that we have to offer for this particular case. There is a fault system that's been identified that we know about. And they're what we call extensional faults. And they're kind of related to the opening of the Gulf of Mexico. So they were already there. You already have these faults. You have these cracks that are in the ground, if you want to think about it that way. So we say that those are planes of weakness. So if we start to put pressure on the crust, then that's going to be the weak spot where movement's most likely to occur.
Is that weak spot, for some reason, there near Bruton and Century, Florida? I mean, it seems like a lot of the reports here lately have had that as kind of a... Could you use epicenter as the term, or what's the correct term?
So the epicenter would be the location on the surface up above where the slipping in the ground actually happens. So where the center of the earthquake, if you were to plot it on a map, that would be the epicenter. But there is a fault line that extends through there. There's actually a couple of main faults, and we kind of lump them all together and call them the Bahamas fracture seismic zone. So it's a series of faults. It runs kind of northwest and southeast and actually heads into Florida. And if you were to extrapolate it, it would go down to the Bahamas. So this is a long fault system or a fault complex where you have all of these cracks in the subsurface that are going to be your most likely place around here, at least for earthquakes to occur. So we don't have at least as far as I know, we don't have a fault system underneath Mobile or something like that, which is why these earthquakes are kind of focused in a line if you look at where they've occurred.
If you're just joining us, talking to Dr. Alex Beebe, Assistant Professor of Geology with the University of South Alabama. You did mention in a past interview there was these dormant faults. There's one that runs through the Mobile Tensaw Delta, right?
Yeah, there's actually, it's a little bit different, kind of a north-south set of faults. That make up what's called the Mobile Graben. So there's two faults, and in the center you have this kind of this block, if you want to call it, which is we call a graben. It's just a fancy word for this block that's sliding down. And so in the past, in this area, that area is kind of sunk down, and that's why we have the confluence of a number of rivers, and we have that delta system as this low-lying area. It's kind of moving through that block that's kind of dropped down there. But those faults, we're not exactly sure what happens to them as they make their way towards the northern part of Mobile Bay. We suspect that they kind of fizzle out, and we kind of leave the graben at that point.
This question here from the text line from Dan, and this kind of goes in with a couple different questions. He said, I wondered about the tremors. Is there oil in Jay? He's talking about Jay, Florida. Has been taken out of the earth now for a couple of decades. I'm just wondering if the void created by removing the oil is causing some downward shifting to fill that void.
You know, that's a really good question. And actually, there has been a study in that particular area. There was a magnitude 4.9 earthquake that happened in 1997, and the USGS investigated that area because there is oil production, to see if there was a relationship between the two. And usually when geologists are looking at a relationship for what we call human-induced earthquakes with petroleum activities, we're looking at not the oil extraction, you know, pulling oil out of the ground and creating a void, because actually, as it turns out, that tends to make faults stronger, because you're removing fluid that's kind of pushing the two sides of the fault apart. So when you release that pressure, then the rocks can kind of rest on top of one another, and there's a lot more friction to hold things in place. But associated with oil production, we do get a lot of wastewater, and it's very heavily contaminated and usually reinjected back down into the ground. And that has led to earthquakes in certain areas. And so that's what the investigation was about, this paper that came out kind of studying the area. And they kind of pointed that there may have been a link between petroleum production and the earthquake, but this was back in 1999. The paper was released, and there haven't been any earthquakes until now, so it's kind of hard to make that connection between the two. But there are areas where Oklahoma is a good example where petroleum production, we suspect heavily, has led to an increase in the frequency and also the magnitude of earthquakes.
Wow, wow. What about looking forward now, this swarming effect? I mean, this is going to be the toughest question ever. Do you see, if you called Las Vegas and put a wager down, Dr. Beebe, on whether we'll see another little tremor or two, what would you say?
I would say as long as we're still having tremors, then the odds are there. I think the odds are more favorable that we would have an earthquake now as opposed to, 5 years ago when it was totally quiet. So when the moving is occurring, then that's probably the best time to get another earthquake coming up.
Wow.
But I'm not saying that there's going to be an earthquake, obviously.
Sure, sure. You're just saying if you had to look over the long span of thousands of years, when there's one, there's a better chance of having another one close to it.
It seems to be the case, especially in this area here.
And remind folks, too, how y'all know when some of these earthquakes that are so light that people don't feel them, how y'all know they happened.
So we use a device called a seismometer. And it, basically what it is it's almost like a microphone, except it listens for a little bit lower frequency sound. And we put these seismometers out. We have one on the campus of the University of South Alabama. And the USGS operates a number of them worldwide, and they're basically just listening devices. We're just listening for the different seismic waves, which are very similar to sound waves. We're listening for those waves to pass through the Earth. And once we get something large enough or we're close enough by, then we hear them and we see them show up on what's called a seismograph. You're probably familiar with the needle,
mm-hmm.
Kind of leaving the squiggles behind as a recording of time. And we see these tremors show up, and we actually have captured the earthquakes from over the Florida-Alabama state line. We've captured them on our seismometer here on campus. They're very, very faint, though. I mean, magnitude 2, magnitude 3, these are very light earthquakes, and they're really hard to even separate sometimes from just the background, the ambient seismic activity, the ambient noise, in other words, just wind, for instance, and waves, and vehicle traffic, things like that can generate sound as well. So when we look at our seismometer, these earthquakes just barely stand out. You probably wouldn't be able to find them unless you knew what you were looking for and when the earthquakes occurred.
Fascinating information here, and maybe we'll be ringing you up again soon. You know what? We will ring you up again soon and talk more about this, Dr. Beebe. We appreciate your time.
All right.
All right, it's Dr. Alex Beebe, Assistant Professor of Geology at the University of South Alabama. Little heads up on some of the shaking that's been going on lately. We're coming right back. We'll grab your phone calls. Lots more to talk about this hour, 343-0106. This is Mobile Mornings.
Hey, guy. This is Midday Mobile as we replay Mobile Mornings, and we can grab some calls when we come back, 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 153 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Feinbaum on the way just about 7 minutes from right now. I'm sure lots of talk about Auburn hoops and the Sweet 16, which, reminder, Auburn tips off at the random, well, it's not random, the arbitrary time of 6:29 p.m. on Friday instead of 6:30, just to bother me. Our coverage with the pregame show will start at 6 right here Friday evening at FM Talk 106.5. Sweet 16 play right here on your local radio station, FM Talk 106.5. Oh, by the way, speaking of which, we mentioned it this morning, but the Nappy nominations have been going on for a couple weeks here. You go to votenappies.com. That's the awards Lanyap tallies the votes for each year. And I sure appreciate your votes, and y'all have been so gracious to us over the years with this radio station. I just want to remind you, when you start looking at all the favorite shows and all that, Lanyap, they're not ready. They're not ready for the likes of us, even after a decade, because most stations will just have you know, if they have local programming, they'll have a show or they'll have a certain host or something like that. But a station like ours that does so many hours a week of live local shows, we're actually we compete against ourselves, right? Because within the FM Talk 106.5 family, there are so many shows. So have at it. I wish there were more categories for the different breakdowns and kind of shows we do on this radio station, but there's not. But I just want to make sure, when you go over to votenappies.com, which I sure appreciate you going there, and after you tell them your favorite radio station and all that, and you get into the shows, think about all the different shows you listen to on the station. And we have them all. I'm not going to say one because we're all family, and they'll get mad if I don't say the other ones. But we have so many shows that are on. We're live 7 days a week, live local shows, locally produced radio, 7 days a week around here, that we have got a big family here of people doing these shows. So go through, look through our schedule, think about the shows you listen to maybe on a Saturday or a Sunday or any day of the week or the evenings or something like that, and make sure you nominate them and get them as part of the nominees going into the Nappy voting for the win. So we have the nomination process first, then the big voting. All right. I want to kind of two things here. I want to break this down. Two clips here. The first one is from Jeffrey Berman. Okay, we talked about Avenatti earlier in the hour. This is from Jeffrey Berman, who is the New York U.S. attorney. Okay, he has one press conference today. He is talking about Avenatti and this extortion deal that they allege Avenatti was trying to conduct against Nike.
Through the alleged course of conduct, Avenatti used legal terms like claims and settlements and retainers, but these were mere devices to provide cover for Avenatti's extortionate demands for a massive payday for himself.
Okay, that was just one of the many clips that came out of that presser. And believe me, you'll hear more this evening. We'll talk more about it tomorrow. But that's going on in New York. Now let's hop a jet and let's wing our way to sunny Los Angeles, where an IRS special agent, Mark Pearson, so it's the... It's in New York. Let's keep this straight. You have Jeffrey Berman in New York, who's a New York U.S. attorney, speaking in the first clip. You heard that. Now we wing our way to sunny Los Angeles, where we're hearing from IRS Special Agent Mark Pearson, who is himself on the other coast talking about charges against Avenatti.
Mr. Avenatti is purported to have lied to an IRS revenue officer and also changed bank account information, as well as instructed others to conceal and relocate funds in effort to avoid and defeat IRS tax liens and tax levies.
All right. So, and then, I mean, we could jump in. You have more. You have U.S. Attorney Nick Hanna in Los Angeles saying this.
In essence, it appears Mr. Avenatti loaned the client's own money to the client, money that Mr. Avenatti had already secretly collected. To this day, nearly 15 months later, Mr. Avenatti's client is still waiting for the bulk of his settlement.
Okay, wait. Do you want to go back? Let's go back. We're going to go back to Eastern Time Zone in New York, and then this.
We announce criminal extortion charges against Michael Avenatti. The charges are based on Avenatti's scheme to extract more than $20 million in payments from a public company by threatening to use his ability to garner publicity to inflict financial and reputational harm on the company.
And you think you were having a bad Monday. All right, more on this tomorrow on Mobile Mornings here at FM Talk 106.5. Online, fmtalk1065.com, where you can grab podcasts of all those live local shows. We sure appreciate it. And or even better, subscribe to get them to your phone. iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio. Lots of platforms waiting for you. And make sure you give us a thumbs up or gold star, whatever they do for the rankings there. Appreciate that as well. Feinbaum and some serious, hardcore Sweet 16 basketball talk is next. Y'all have a great one.